And it is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast, and it is 8 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is February 29, 2016, a very special day. And this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to use every second to pray and to share with you our thoughts and concern and what's going on. And sometimes, you know, we have some friends and some guests. And today we have a special guest that the universe, I guess, wanted us to connect. And, you know, we're keeping it and a surprise for her. But Angela is a trooper and is here with us. Angela, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm so happy to have you here today because as the universe goes, so many things happen and things move on, and we don't know where the messages of hope, understanding, and love can come from. And today, for some reason, the universe wanted us to talk, and I know that it's not easy and it's a surprise for you. But please, Angela, tell me, what is your concern and thought these days?
My biggest concern is I consider myself a networker. I was born with the name Angèle, which means, you know, messenger of God. And yeah. I can remember as a teenager hearing a voice, and I've heard it throughout my I was surprised when people didn't hear voices. But even as a teenager, I can remember being, you know, like the voice is so clear in my head. And so to become a networker, like I say, at a young age, I remember, because I was born out in the countryside. We were homesteaders, and we finally moved into a city, and I finally got invited to the party of the year. And I thought, wow, finally, I get in with the in crowd. And as I get to the site, you know, the coolest thing to do at these kind of parties is to smoke. And I kind of had an inkling, but you know, I never smoked. I never drank. I lived in the middle of nowhere up in the mountains in British Columbia. And so as I got into the party, the first thing that somebody hands me is a cigarette. And I remember going up into my head and the voice says, "Don't start. You'll never make it." And I remember saying, "Oh, sorry, wrong brand." And I tried my best to enjoy that frivolous party that young people seem to get into. But when I got home that night, I said to my angels, I said, "You get yourselves down here. Like, I want to know what you want, and why am I hearing this voice?" And they literally said to me that if you start, meaning smoking, we'll never be able to use you. And so I listened carefully for the next while as they went through. I remember pulling out my yearbook, and, you know, that shows all the pictures of everybody who's in your high school class. And as they would kind of brighten up some of the faces. And out of that whole community of 200 kids, I was only allowed to associate with about 6 kids who would not influence me to the point where my angels wouldn't be able to use me later in life. And for me, that means, like, staying true to my essence of being a good human being and connecting to that inner guidance that guides all of us. We all have it. And I'm always just surprised when people say, "What voice? And how do you know it's a voice? And give me proof." And, you know, because we're gifted with it. And so how do we teach, especially the younger people, to hear and be so grateful for that voice that we get? And the other interesting thing that I have found over the years is sometimes there's a different tone in the voice. And sometimes it feels like God, and sometimes it's my angels, and sometimes it's just guidance systems. And sometimes I even ask now. Sometimes I'll say, "What do you guys think?" And I'll get, "It doesn't matter to us." And so then I know I really have free choice. But other times they're very clear with what they would like me to do. And according to my angels, it's sort of like the Buddha. We all somehow have to find middle ground. You know, if we're anti this and for that, somewhere in our consciousness, we need to kind of keep finding middle ground so that we as humans can get along with each other and accept different colors and different religions and different ideas about food and exercise, and that we come from a happy place in our heart, because I think after
Hallelujah. I'm telling you, it's amazing, Angel, because I do understand what you say, and I do believe that if somebody will, you know, if person will move his ego out of the way, he can listen to the godly voice that he has inside, or she has inside, and you especially. But to be interacting with them, that's really amazing, because you actually have a different level of perception that it's exceptional. God bless you. That's awesome. Tell me, what kind of, you know, like a real story that you remember when they made the difference in your life? And I understand what that voice does in a moment of emergency. I know that voice. I recognize it.
Yes. Now, and I've had a few of them, and they're all, I find, amazing. And, you know, at some level, I could just toss it away and say, oh, that voice wasn't real. But for me, the voice is very loud. And so as I grew older, I got married and I became a lifeguard. And I got this sense that my lifeguarding days were over. I'd been in there for 15 years, and you kind of age and the younger crowd comes in that wants your job. And so I got a very clear message one day as I was walking the deck around the pool, that this voice said to me, you know, you're done here. And so I said, like, how am I going to support my family? So that was fine. I mean, I kind of went into tears. And that evening I got home and I, you know, like angels, like, I need some clarity here. And they sort of said, well, you asked us, you know. And so the angels brought back a memory when I was working as a lifeguard. I was actually more than that, because I was quite a I like to organize things. And so we had done runs and races. And I remember one night being up on this ladder, posting the times for all these athletes as they were running past me. So I'd post 1.2 minutes or whatever the time schedule was. And I can remember it being late at night. And I remember looking up to the sky and saying, God, you know, why don't you give me a job that I'd like to organize? And I kind of forgot all about it till I was walking in the woods. So anyway, I quit my job. And after that, that's when they kind of reminded me, because I was going for a walk and this voice said, you're to start a magazine. And I looked up at the sky and I said, and what would I call it? And the voice came back and said, Issues. And I said, wow, what an ugly name for a magazine. But here on Earth, I'm going to need a computer and a new car, and I'm going to need some training, because computers were just out. My son had one of those double disk drives. So this was back in the late 1988 now. And so I was learning to, I hated typing. So it was like, okay, learning to type on a computer was much easier, because you could just backspace and you didn't have to try to put that white stuff on to make the typewriter type what you wanted. And so I learned to type, and so the voice said I was to start a magazine, and I went, wow. So I was by then, because I had quit my swimming pool job, and I was getting, here we get unemployment insurance, and there was a new program that just had started with the government called Opportunities for Employment. There's a specific name for it here in BC. And so I applied to them to start a magazine, and they took away my UIC money, and they gave me a grant to, you know, which kind of replaced the $900 I would have received on employment insurance, and they gave me the grant for the $900, and then I didn't have to report in every week that I was looking for a new job, so I could start my new job, which was to be a networker. And it's been an amazing, you know, almost 30 years now of listening to this. The voice gets finer and not as loud. In the early days, the voice would be quite clear. And to continue on with the little magazine story, so I get to thinking about the magazine, and I walk out the next day for another little, and the voice says, you're to start a magazine. You're to write a column for the magazine. And I remember looking up and I saying, and what would I call that? And the voice said, musings. And I said, well, I'll look that word up in the dictionary, and if it means anything, I'll see what I can do. And so I looked up the word musings. Because, like I say, I came from a one-room schoolhouse. My education, I didn't even finish high school. My education was minimal in the English arts, and I didn't like I say, the typing. I was a seamstress, so I did a lot of that type of thing. What I knew, I kind of did the basics. So with the musings, I started writing a column. And just after I started, so these are the little miracles, but just after I started my magazine, I was organizing things. I was metaphysical events. So we started a metaphysical society, and I would have people that wanted to do meditation come into town, and I'd post posters all over the town. And this one lady asked me to do it, and I put up her posters, and afterwards she said, you're publishing this magazine. She says, you have a very interesting style of writing. I says, oh, why? Thank you. And she says, not well written, but you know, you've got some really good ideas. And I said, well, what should I do about it? And she says, well, she says, I'm an English professor with the Knowledge Network. Why don't you send me your ideas, and we'll work together on getting this message out there.
Nice.
And she's still with me 30 years later. She still edits all the things that come out of my mouth, because I'm not a writer by nature, but I have interesting messages that I pick up, and the Angel Network would like to get it out there.
Angel, first of all, I bless you, and I'm really thankful for the opportunity to listen, because I know that special human beings are all around us, and people with great messages and with great heart, and God will not choose them if they weren't special. So I want to be thankful to God that gave me the opportunity to listen to you and understand that, you know, I can really trust, you know, that the world is not done yet. There are still forces of good that will help us all get over this period. And, you know, I'm talking from Israel. The Middle East is in the uproar, and we cannot calm ourselves enough. But with your voice, I let you speak, because you bring that spirit of hope, and I thank you. Thank you so much, Angel, for being on my show. Where we can find you in case we want to reach you?
You can go to my website. It's issuesmagazine.net.
Issuesmagazine.net.
So just ISSUES magazine, and I'm a networker, so it's .net. And I have a Facebook page, as most of us all do. And my husband and I run the... Pardon? My name is Angel. Yes. Okay. So my name is Angel Ortega. So it's Angel with an E, A-N-G-E-L-E, and Ortega, O-R-T-E-G-A. And if you type in Ortega or Angel and issues, you'll find
me
on great communication.
Absolutely.
And then my husband and I also run the Johnson's Landing Retreat Center here in a little tiny community in British Columbia as well. So we also have the Johnson's Landing Retreat.bc.ca.
That's nice.
As if you want to see, you know, a wonderful place for rejuvenation. And so here I get to teach about serving healthy organic foods. We run a permaculture garden here, and young people come and stay with us for a while, and other people come too and help us out to create a community here. And so it's been quite a wonderful adventure that you don't get to learn in high school or university. You know, listening to your
angels
and trusting yourself is just the best thing we can do for ourselves as we all become who we, you know, who we wanted to be when we came here. If we don't get stuck in some of the tragic deviations that our society, such as TV or smoking or the drugs of any kind, you know, they're all distractions from our real purpose.
Absolutely.
And so what do you get to do in Israel?
we get to talk about politics, and you're an exception today because it's the 29th of February. It comes once in 4 years. That's why we needed somebody to cheer us up. And trust me, we need all the cheering in the world. It's really going nuts here. So
politics is a good subject too, but we keep got to find middle ground all the time.
Absolutely. And on politics, trust me, there are thousands that are trying to understand what's going on. For me, I'm praying. That's my role. I take the time to pray because nobody can make sense out of it. We're trying, but we're doing our best.
Pray.
Listen,
yes,
I got to let you go. All the best. God bless you. Thank you. And we're going to chit-chat, and we'll find you on Facebook, Angel Ortega. Thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Love our listeners. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ciao. Let's get some music, and we'll be right back. Right, we are back. This is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth, and we just spoke to Angel Ortega, which lovely voice of sense, great spirit, who talks about us. You know, you need to trust your gut. That's some voice that you know you have inside. It's your gut. When you have a gut feeling, you know how it's gonna go, and it's always real, and it's always truth, and you always have to listen to it. Now, if you choose not to, you know, it's obvious that the consequence will be deviation, late. You know, everything possible happens. All right, so we want to listen to that gut feeling. And we want to fix some, square some ideas, what happened in the last week that, you know, since I've been gone. And first of all, I want to say hallelujah for the ceasefire in Syria. Hallelujah, because they actually agreed to ceasefire. Of course, there was some bombing and there was some uncontrolled fire. But God bless you. Let's start the human aid, you know, factor, because the United Nations needs to give it a day or two to relax before she can put really high people on the ground. Please let them bring some food, some rescue to all the areas. And whoever is not playing right, you know, they're the big guys who bombard it. Why to do that? Let's pray for the ceasefire, for the children of Syria, that will have a safe haven someplace, and God will take them, you know, and bless them. You know, I saw the two boys running in the street of Syria when the ceasefire started, and they were playing soccer. Guys, do you know how many days they are missing playing balls? Do you know that there are children that were born in this war? Why don't we all just stop it? We can blow the whole moon if we want, blow the whole universe if we want. It's not going to happen this time because we know better. And we know better when things are working and not. And we know, you know, better when, you know, they're trying, the Egyptian, they have so much extra problem from Sinai and from all the terrorist organization that is running through Gaza Strip that's been evacuated by Israel, and now it's all terrorist land. It's not Palestinian, it's terrorist land. The Palestinian wants to claim to more. It's not possible. You guys handle Gaza and then we talk. But an Egyptian lawmaker got hit by a shoe from meeting with the Israeli ambassador. Now we have a situation on the ground. We have a world situation of terror. Egyptian leaders want to meet with counterpart. We all playing in the same boat, guys. It doesn't matter if you put, you know, Star of David or you put any other flag. doesn't matter. We all in it together. So to the Egyptian lawmaker that, you know, that did take the time to meet and wants to meet with, and actually invited the Israeli ambassador to his house. What a hospitality. Perfect. Let Egypt go back to where it used to be, you know, in better places with democracy. Let's do it. So I want to thank the lawmaker from there, to from Egypt, that it takes. But I want also to comment about what Mr. Cameron said on Jerusalem. And frankly, I don't know where it came from, but oh boy, if he missed that boat. You're talking about East Jerusalem has not developed. Duh, you know, the European Union, the Quartet, that you had, you know, a very great emissary, you know, Tony Blair, used to run the Middle East Quartet ideas. You guys didn't let us build a wall or a gate or infrastructure, a road, houses, nothing in Jerusalem. It's Jerusalem is out of the game. You guys want to take care of it, right? And look what happening. So when you talk to about us, we didn't take care of East Jerusalem under sovereignty of Israel, it's really devastating. First of all, I want to go back to you, England, say, what did you do in India so much and in Africa? You really want to pick that with the Israeli? When while we are bombarded or while we are getting, you know, terrorist attack, we didn't protect the right of the civil humanity there. Anyway. Let's keep on going. I got some few things to let you listen today, especially on the fact that there's 2 years from the passing of the Prime Minister Sharon, and today there was a very special homage to his memory in the Knesset, in the Israeli Parliament. And from right and left, they all talk so highly of Prime Minister Sharon that did try to give peace a chance. And look what happened in Gaza. All right. So let's see if we can listen to the Sharon segment in his memory.
Ariel Sharon was a man of many talents. Sharon was an expert at farming, war, and politics. He was one of the best generals in Israel's history and among the elite in the world. He rose from a lower-level politician to the Prime Minister of Israel. As we explore his life, Bilhah Rahn, a former Israeli soldier under his command and childhood friend of Ariel Sharon, will provide her input about him on a more personal level. Ariel Sharon was born on the 26th of February, 1928, in Kfar Malal. His name Ariel means Lion of God, but his diminutive is Arik. His father Samuel was not very religious, but was a strong and passionate Zionist. Zionism is a movement that believes that Israel should exist as a Jewish nation and act as a refuge from anti-Semitism present throughout most of the world. The Sharon family lived on a moshav in the British Mandate of Palestine called Kfar Malal. A moshav is an agricultural farming community.
We were in a moshav, villages were very small, only 35 families in Yarkona, and he lived in Kfar Malal. We were side by side, which was maybe 45 families. And so we had the same school and the same doctors and the same youth groups and the same bus took us to school, you know, later on in high school to Tel Aviv.
When Ariel was 14 years old, he joined the Haganah.
At that time, in those years, he did not excel particularly and people could not recognize that someday he would become such a big hero. But he became later on. He was commanding us in the Haganah, which is the paramilitary before the government, before we had a Jewish state. And they were training every young person, young and old, everyone, to be prepared in case we'd be attacked by the Arabs. And so the girls were learning first aid, and he was teaching us how to prepare in case we are attacked.
He was quite skilled in maneuvering tanks and gifted at reading maps. His greatest military achievement was his performance in the Yom Kippur War. In October 1973, Egypt, Syria, and Iraq...
are back, and it's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. That was some, no, you know, some not clear voices, but definitely memorial voices on Prime Minister Sharon, which was a force in the Israeli political life and the army life and the leadership of the Middle East. He was one of the game changers of 1973 of the Yom Kippur, when he crossed the you know, the Suez Canal. And there was a lot of stories about how he started, you know, the first Lebanon War in 1982. But the truth of the matter is that after what happened in the north, in Syria, in Lebanon, many people felt that he wasn't, you know, he didn't do a good enough job, and they sent him home. But then they call upon him, and he came and delivered, as usual. He tried his best to turn from a hawk to a peaceful dove, and he agreed to withdraw from the Gaza Strip, throwing like that, like 30,000 houses from the Jewish part, just to tell you the sacrifice this country had to have to evacuate those people that are still not settled yet. None of them. And I remember that there were also some kind of a bonus that we were supposed to get from President Clinton when we withdrew from the Lebanon 2000. It's not easy, I'm telling you. It's funny that in 2000, Barack withdrew from Lebanon what Ariel Sharon started in 1982, 18 years of that. And, you know, the rest of the history is written. You can find it. It's really clear. People do their job. They're trying to do their best. There is nothing, you know, not a miracle, not a combined effort, you know, to destroy anything, just to get along and have a life. And you have the leader that you need, and Ariel Sharon was one of them. Now, there are other leaders that we are questioning these days, especially when the debate in America about the next presidential election. And sure enough, we can see the rising, you know, of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton as the counterpart in the Democratic Party, even though that today I can hear noises that, you know, some people are thinking that to undermine Hillary Clinton, you know, it's going to be a good, a fair and square fight for American future, and it's real, and it's good. It's good. As long as we all get together on the same page after that, and as long as we start proceeding to a new age in the Middle East. And I know that there is not much hope at this moment, but once, you know, the United Nations will start bringing the stuff, we're going to collaborate and help any way we can to keep the areas calm, and you do your best. And I know that there is talks about, you know, what's going to happen in Gaza if the PA, Palestinian Authority, will be destroyed by, you know, collapsing. And I say there is no fear for that, because there are leaders there of, you know, the organized mechanism is already settled. They have it. They just have to keep on hoping and doing their best. And please just stop with this, you know, rhetoric, you know, kill. Let's start fixing. I know it's not easy. I know there are a lot of enemies, but we are in the same boat, and we cannot start a fight here. All right, you guys, let's listen to some music, and we'll be right after that.
2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Wow, that was John Lennon. All we are saying, give peace a chance. That's what we are. We have to give peace a chance. Let's try it. Why not? It can be nice. And we have to remember a very kind gentleman, a very dear soul, that spent all their life, mostly a holy's life, to bring the message of John Lennon, give peace a chance, to the Middle East. He took a boat and he put it in the middle of the ocean. And from that boat, he put music day in, day out, 24 hours a day, the peace. It was peace line for the world to come. His name was Ebi Natan. And he died, not as brave and, and rich as he was, but he spent all, whatever he had to bring that boat to the area and to keep it going. And today you can hear a lot of, many times, the voice of peace is, something that, it's like a jingle that is played in other radio here, and some people are trying to carry the torch, but in Hebrew it's really hard to pass the message. So, the voice of peace is something we do need to have. And with BBS Radio, we're doing it to peaceful existence all over the world, but in the Middle East it will be really nice. Would love to have the voice of peace, really, for the whole region. You never know. Somebody will listen to us, and if God wants, everything can happen, right? So let's go back and continue with our segment. There is like some news on the Iran deal that I want you to listen to.
Well, a contentious issue in this campaign has been the Iranian nuclear deal. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders strongly support it, while the Republicans are vehemently against it. Well, now it turns out the agreement is not even signed. The State Department telling Republican Congressman Lee Zeldin of New York that it does not have to be. So Congressman Zeldin asked Secretary of State John Kerry about all this and the curious absence of Iran's John Hancock.
Why didn't you ask Iran to sign the nuclear agreement?
Well, I believe they did sign.
Well, the letter that you sent said it's not a signed agreement. The reason why I was asking is it says the JCPOA is not a treaty or an executive agreement.
That's
it
accurate.
And it is not a signed document.
That is accurate. It's not a treaty. It is a political agreement. But the actual agreement between the IAEA and Iran is signed.
Okay.
And that is a legal obligation.
But the Iran nuclear agreement, the JCPOA, the P5 plus one, whatever we call it, is not signed by
Iran. That is a political agreement, correct.
So what does all this mean? Ambassador John Bolton, former U.S. ambassador at the U.N., Fox News contributor, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, joins us as always. So, Ambassador, I buy a car, I sign for it. I buy a house, I sign the mortgage. I go to Applebee's for my Fiesta chicken dinner and the nachos at dinner, and I sign the check. Is my Applebee's bill, because I signed it, more legally binding than the Iranian nuclear deal?
Well, I think it's probably worth more than the Iran nuclear deal. Welcome to the fantasy land of international law. Look, the Iranians have said for 15 years that every agreement they've made with the Europeans, with the Perm 5, up to and including this Vienna nuclear deal, is simply a voluntary undertaking on their part. They've entered into it voluntarily, and when it suits them to perform it, they'll perform it. When it doesn't suit them to perform it anymore, they'll walk away from it. So they at least have been consistent. They treat all of this as something that they do out of the goodness of their hearts. Now, in fact, I think they're already violating the Vienna deal. I think they've been violating it before the ink was dry. But they've never been under any illusions as to just exactly how binding this is in their minds. It's purely voluntary from their perspective.
Well, Secretary of State Kerry at that hearing told the congressman that the vice president of Iran signed the IAEA agreement. Does that count? Is that enough?
Well, jump for joy. You know, that agreement gives the IAEA certain responsibilities to monitor the Iranian nuclear program. And I believe the IAEA will do what it can under the limitations that have been put under it, including being denied access to some key facilities. But the real point is that the IAEA is not an espionage agency. It monitors what is declared to it and what is open to it. I think it will do that, and that's all it will do. It will not be a sure guarantee that Iran is not violating the deal, for example, by cooperating with North Korea, among others, both on nuclear matters and on ballistic missile matters, which are not covered by the deal at all.
Do you believe that Iran is living up to its word in this deal?
Absolutely not. I think they never had any intention of living up to their word. I think that their objective was to get relief from the international economic sanctions, to get their assets unfrozen, to get back into international commerce, to try and bind the West in with economic deals that will be very hard for a new president to reverse, to get people to accept the inevitable about Iran's continued progress. And with another year to go of this administration, they're well on the way to doing it. This was a path North Korea went down in the 1990s when it signed the agreed framework with the Clinton administration. You could write a playbook for rogue states seeking weapons of mass destruction as to how to con the United States. And the Iranians read the playbook and did an excellent job of it from their perspective.
And finally, Ambassador, you just used the word inevitable. What do you think the inevitable is?
The inevitable is a nuclear-armed Iran capable with ballistic missiles to hit targets anywhere on Earth. Countries in the region realize this already, the Saudis, the Egyptians, the Turks, and others. That's why they've now started nuclear weapons programs. The consequences of this deal are extraordinarily adverse for the United States and its friends. It ought to be the subject of a lot of discussion in the upcoming presidential campaign, especially given Hillary Clinton's likely nomination, since the strategy that Barack Obama pursued that led to the deal being signed last year was a strategy that started when she was Secretary of State.
Ambassador John Bolton, as always, we thank you for your insight. Certainly we'll continue with this in the campaign. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth, and you heard Ambassador Bolton about the non-signed Iran deal. So let's ask the question. If they're cheating us from the deal and they didn't sign it, well, they don't cheat. They didn't sign it. So it means they are not obligated. The only one that got the impression that we are obligated is the Western world. And they let them do whatever they want. They started the deal and said, okay, let's pretend we're signing a deal. Now we're going to release all the money and we're going to give you all, you know, trade agreement of sort. We're going to deliver you, you know, the airplane. But you are not really obligated to anything of sort. Now, you know, somebody would think that we have to reconsider and do a different program about it. I don't know. But the truth of the matter is that all bets are up. I know that the Iranians, if they like it or not, they're not stupid. And they cannot upset America so much. And Israel is interest of American interest in the Middle East, and that's how it's going to play. So they can play with fire as much as they want, but they will be the one who will burn eventually, like what's happening right now with Turkey. Turkey is playing with fire. Again, on a different level, of course. It's not like federalistic, but they try to play all hands. It's like octopus. How many hands you can think you can play? You can play with Russia, you can play with America, you can play with Israel, you can play with, you know, with the European Union, and then you can kill the Kurds. Like, what permission you have to kill the Kurds? Because you don't like them? Why Turkey is killing the Kurds? Why it's allowed even? Why it's allowed to kill anybody for that matter? But, you know, it's like they don't want them to exist. And it's a, you know, it's a continuation. You have a 30 million population of the Kurds, and they are an instigator, of course, in Iraq and Syria and Turkey. But it's about time we tell the Turks, stop. You're talking to Israel about relieving the sanction against Gaza. Now, did you see what's happening there with the tunnel that they're building underneath? And Turkey is in any position to ask Israel to risk her existence for what? For friendship with Turkey? Well, keep your friendship because we saw how friendly you are. You know, we pass all this merchandise. It's a business deal. Let's not kid ourselves. Turkey is a business deal for Israel, and Israel is respecting it. Now, they've been pushing the envelope for quite some time, and it's about time they stop. But I want them to stop killing the Kurds. Because, somebody's going to make a different decision, and they're going to be inside the, in the middle of all. So let's really be easy and pray for everybody's safeguards, all right? And let the bad boys just rest, settle. Maybe one day somebody will talk to them or deal with them. Anyway, let's get some music and we'll be back after that.
Once upon a young year, when all our shadows disappeared, the animals inside came out to play. Went face to face with all our fears, learned our lessons through the tears, made memories we knew would never fade. One day my father, he told me, son, don't let it slip away. He took me in his arms, I heard him say, when you get older, your wild heart will live for younger days. Thinking it's ever you're afraid. He said one day.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. The Middle East is crazy, and I don't even want to tell you what's going on the grounds in Israel here between, all the fraction of the opposition and coalition and to Palestinian and Arab representatives that are really, really in the big water. I think that things are changing. Everybody is caring. Everybody is moving along. It's going to be better, I'm sure, because every change will bring the best. Now, that's the only thing we can go up. Remember that? We made all the mistakes that we could. Now we have to go back. All right, guys, let's listen to some words of advice and wisdom from Rabbi Sacks.
Thank the noble Lord, Lord Great, for introducing this debate, to which I wish to add one observation. Democracy is not achieved merely by giving everyone the vote. Freedom is not achieved merely by removing a tyrant. They require a sustained effort of education and a balanced supply of information. Without these, democracy can descend into mob rule and from there to a new tyranny, exactly as Plato thought it would. The results of the Arab Spring, 4 years on, are a tragic testimony to this truth. Democratic freedom is sustained by media that take it as their task to present all sides of a complex issue, and by universities that understand the importance of academic freedom, which means giving a respectful hearing to views different from your own. Today, these values are being undermined. The internet and social media mean that people can go through life without encountering views with which they disagree. Some universities have allowed students effectively to ban the presentation of views with which they disagree. A soundbite culture makes it hard for people to understand the complexities of political conflict. The human mind finds it hard to handle moral and political complexity and can easily avoid it by dividing the world into the good guys and the demons and concluding that all you have to do to solve a problem is to first silence and then eliminate the bad guys. Often in the past, they were called the Jews. Today, they are called the State of Israel. That is not good for the future of freedom in the Middle East. I would urge the government to do all it can to ensure that our institutions of education and information honor the principle that justice involves audi alteram partem, which means let the other side be heard as well.
All right, and we are back. It's it was the wisdom of Baron Rabbi Sacks, Jonathan Sacks from England, which tells you, you know, listen to that aside. We need to open our ear and listen, and that's true. But we need to, you know, to ask Mr. Ban Ki-moon, what is obsession with Israel? You know, what's wrong with this clip that all the terror around is, you know, elevated, and the only thing they have a problem with are Israeli. All right, I guess that God give us, you know, no slack. We need to be always on guard. What can you do? All right, there is so much things happening, and there are events all over in America and in the world to keep you posted and keep you, you know, in touch with what's going on. And I know that, you know, there is in New York events that Emmett Insiders can share with you. I know that there are a lot of news all over. You guys cannot stop watching. You can go on day and night just keeping up with the news. But the truth of the matter, it's going fast, and we need the leaders to keep it cool and play nice and work together as a team. You know, whatever it takes, just let's get over this time in the universe that is calling for a prayer for everyone. We've been working hard. We've been praying hard, but we've been, you know, sometimes going against stream, and sometimes you're not sure which way is up. And in that moment, when you're not sure, you have to trust. It's like I remember on the plane when you know, I took lessons, flying lessons, and when I went over the ocean, I didn't know which side is up. It's like amazing. You're going over the ocean and you're flying. And if you wouldn't trust to keep, you know, your eye on the ball and the altitude that you're flying in, of course, and all the rest, you wouldn't know in what direction you're going and if you're up or you're down. And that takes a lot of technique. It has to have, you know, your inside voice needs to be strong. You have to trust in yourself and trust in your rule. That's why your blueprints needs to be clear. They need to know exactly what you do in the time of crisis. Once you do that and you keep on post, you know, keep on, you will get over that bridge in no time. And the only thing, as we do in the Jewish faith, is saying, you know, there is everything in life is like a narrow bridge, but something you have to remember, never lose hope, ever, and never be afraid. God is with you, and God is with us, and remember, there is a God, and it's not us. So, in that note, I want to send you with a great music, with a lot of love for me, in Israel, in Jerusalem. Come to visit. The season is amazing. And now that the ceasefire in the region is going to start, it's going to bring, God willing, peaceful existence to all of us. Let's hope for that. Let's target that. That's how it's going to be. God bless you all, and talk to you next Monday. Bye-bye. Ciao, ciao.